That's right.
That's the first place to go,
that's right,
right there on the face of it.
You're right on it, Bob.
That's right on it.
You don't have to go back into the rest of it.
No, we want to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in upper page non-negare, in mail fraud, there's 900 pages specifically on that issue in the law. So you've got them probably on 10 or 15 counts, and under California law, you got them for $250,000 for every count.
Well, I think that you should attach all 900 pages as an exhibit.
No, what you do, you go in and make it specific. And,
right.
You know, Dave Miller has produced a pure document. Mm-hmm. Anything we do to vary that document by bringing in case law or anything else other than procedure, we're contaminating the document.
All right.
So you got them under specific law that you can act on right now because of procedures. The whole attack now should be strictly procedure.
Right.
All right.
Yes.
Keep going, because this is going to be fun.
Oh, it will be.
Oh, yes.
Collins doesn't stay to help Bob. Bob's got to do it all alone.
I'm available by telephone 24 hours a day.
I like your warm body.
Better watch out, EJ.
So does the judge in Massachusetts.
All right.
Nothing to do with me.
Yeah, why involve him?
And others for violation of federal copyright and unfair competition laws, and upon state law claims for relief.
Boy, I mean, we're really in competition with them, aren't we?
Eckers have denied liability to USB for any alleged damages or other relief. Well,
yeah, this is important, so be sure you get that.
Question? Word relief mean?
Oh.
That's saying in lieu of damages, the injunction is
twice. Well, that sort of thing will become more and more clear because, you see, before this agreement was written, there was a lot of stuff taking place between attorneys.
One other thing I want to point out. Look how all this is all uppercase non-negare, but look what they did to Judge Coyle.
Hmm.
Look at the wording. Read it. It's proper.
Are you in a different document?
Yeah. It's what?
Look at how they did Honorable Robert E. Coyle. They did not do that in all uppercase non-negare.
So he's the only living being there.
Yeah.
Wow.
There have been two or three conversations going on at one time here, and I think I'm going to make Bob go back through his nom de guerre and everybody being dead.
Yeah, that's very important.
Nobody got that.
That's very important that these be able to.
Well, the bottom line is that this is a clear violation of how they have addressed everybody in this document.
Eckers are dead and Coyle is living.
Well, that's basically right, and I like to point out that this is exactly how they stole all the property from the people in Hawaii. They made an agreement with them on a lease for 20 years, and they put all their names in uppercase non-negare. 20 years and one day, they had been dead and not living on that land because they were killed on paper. And then 20 years and one day, according to the treaty agreement they had with the United States, the people were allowed to take that land from them legally because they had not lived on the land for 20 years. They were dead. And this is a very critical point and one that is open to attack, and you have a clear violation by Judge Coyle for allowing this, and you now can go back with a Title 42 against Coyle if you just analyze it and look at it from that perspective. And forget all of this conclusionary law.
Right.
That isn't in your case anymore if you attack it from a constitutional common law standpoint. All this stuff is trash. Mm-hmm. You've got them if you just do it.
Well, we're going to do it.
Well, don't talk about statute law and all the other laws that can contaminate your common law. Keep it pure and simple and keep it on common law. And that means you're going to have to file your paperwork properly with the court, that it cannot be heard under any other jurisdiction than common law, just like Dave Miller suggests. And you got them.
Yeah, but you don't have any response to them until you learn a little bit more. So we have to tread a little bit cautiously.
You know, 90% of everything that's going to happen, it has to happen in paperwork.
Right.
You establish jurisdiction in the court via paperwork.
All right.
You don't march into the courtroom and say, I get declared as common law. That's not the way. You do it by paperwork. Once they accept the contract, then they're under contract when you pay that filing fee.
So nom de guerre means if anybody's name is printed in all uppercase letters, they are dead after 20 years.
And that's in the law.
They're dead.
That's in the law.
After 20 years of this meeting.
Dead?
No, it depends on the situation. In Hawaii, that was a 20-year contract. And by the king, who had made the contract by treaty with the United States.
My suggestion, too, is when you start filing your paperwork, you're poor, ignorant people. And to, you know, you have a right to flag different areas with your index and so forth. I would flag with these non-fringe flags just your two originals. And if they object to defacing of this paper or they try to refuse to accept it, you just tell them, well, that marks our original copies. What do you mean? We're just too dumb to know the difference. But this will establish your common law right on the front page of your document.
The common law center have their stationery printed with colored flag printed on it.
No, I think that's an excellent idea.
That's not
excellent idea.
You can't pull that sticker off.
That's right.
That's right.
Should we try the next word?
I think Keith and Margie better move out here, too. They're going to get extremely tired of making comments and having to drive all the way out here to implement them. Well, they won't drive. They'll learn. They will figure a way to fly, I'm sure, knowing Keith. Yes, I know. He will insist on a long commute.
One other point I want to make on this before I forget it is that in Dave Miller's in his study and the cases he's represented, in over 1,000 cases where a judge has responded with a 4-page document, there has been 50 procedural errors in 4 pages, or up to 50 to 200 procedural errors in 4 pages of the court's response. So that is a good place to look for relief in there.
I'll try again.
Eckers, just feel free.
Eckers have denied liability to USP for any alleged damages or other relief sought by USP in that action. During the course of the litigation, USP obtained a sanction order against the Eckers for attorney's fees in the amount of $6,230, which is now referred to as the sanction order, which, as of the date of this agreement, has not been satisfied, all or in part. Number 3, USP and the Eckers now wish to resolve the pending litigation described in paragraph 2 above and to resolve other potential claims between them, known and unknown, by the following agreements, covenants, conditions, and releases. No admission of liability. Number 4. It is understood and agreed by all parties to this agreement that the agreement is not to be construed or interpreted as an admission of any liability or wrongdoing of any nature whatsoever on the part of the Eckers or any other person, firm, entity, or corporation, and likewise shall not be construed or interpreted to the prejudice of any party named herein. Each party named in this agreement expressly denies any and all liability associated with the above-referenced litigation and claims. Stipulated permanent injunction. Number 5. At the time this agreement is signed, the Eckers and USP will sign a stipulated permanent injunction in the form described in Exhibit A, and incorporated by reference. USP will immediately present the stipulated permanent injunction to the court for signature and filing as a final binding court order. The Eckers expressly waive their right to challenge the permanent injunction by appeal or collateral attack.
How about that one?
Boy, that's really locks you in.
The Eckers expressly agree to be bound by each and every term of the permanent injunction described in Exhibit A. Stipulated money judgment and agreement not to file or execute. Number 6. As part of this settlement agreement and simultaneously with the execution of this agreement, the Eckers shall sign and deliver to USP's attorneys stipulated judgments in the form set forth in Exhibits B and C hereto, which are incorporated by reference, and USP shall sign and deliver to the Eckers attorneys a stipulation in the form set forth in Exhibit D hereto, which is incorporated by reference. Exhibit B is a stipulated judgment in the total principal sum of $25,000 and no cents. Exhibit C is a stipulated judgment post-dated December 1, 1996.
Get that?
In the total principal sum of $31,230 and no cents. A little side note here. If you add the $62,230 to the $25,000, you come up with this $31,230 and no cents. So what happens is that the former sanction of $62,230 gets added onto the $25,000 at the end of the second year. And so we have now a lawsuit filed on December 9th, 9 days after this consolidation occurs. Exhibit D is a stipulation which stipulates to the vacation of the sanction order effective December 1, 96. That's the 6230 then is abandoned. A. The stipulated judgment set forth in Exhibit B may be filed with the court and executed upon by USP only in the event of a finding of contempt by the court of the stipulated permanent injunction described in paragraph 5 above at any time between December 1, 1994 and December 1, 1996. As of December 1, 1996, the stipulated judgment described in Exhibit B shall be void and of no effect, and USP shall return it to the Eckers attorneys.
Could you explain that in English?
Yes. During the 2 years from December 1, 1994 to 1996, there were two financial obligations in effect. One was a sanction for $62,230 and the other was the $25,000. On December 1st, they were to void out the sanction for $62,230 and file what was post-dated, a post-dated one for $31,230 prior, you know, and so that $31,230 then takes care of the two.
Just money.
It's all the same money. After December 1, 96, USP may file with the court and execute upon the stipulated judgment described in Exhibit C only upon a finding by the court of contempt of the stipulated permanent injunction.
Now you got her.
Really?
Like
we
read
it again. Only we did it again.
All right. Remember, this lawsuit was filed on December the 9th, 96. This last one, the contempt thing.
Right.
So what it says here is, after December 1, 96, USP may file with the court and execute upon the stipulated judgment described in Exhibit C, that's the one for $31,230, only upon a finding by the court of contempt of the stipulated permanent injunction described in paragraph 5 above. Provided, however, that USP shall not be permitted to execute upon any portion of the sum of $6,230 and no cents, as USP may have collected from the Eckers between December 1, 94 and December 96, pursuant to sanction order, which simply means they can't collect it twice, nor upon any sum collected by USP under Exhibit B between December 1 and December 1, 96, and any writ of execution sought to be issued pursuant to the stipulated judgment on or after December 1, 96, shall give due credit for any sums collected toward the principal sum of $6,230 or toward Exhibit B before December 1, 96. This is item C. Exhibit D shall be filed immediately upon execution of this agreement, and USP will take any action and sign any further documents as may be necessary in order to vacate the sanction order. Paragraph D. Except as expressly provided herein, and only upon exhaustion of all appeals from a judicial finding of contempt of the stipulated permanent injunction described in paragraph 5 above, USP may not file, execute upon, nor claim, or file any lien or abstract based upon the stipulated judgments attached hereto as Exhibit B and C. In the event there is a finding of contempt, and U.S. files and or executes upon the stipulated judgments described in subparagraphs A or B, and the finding of contempt is reversed on appeal, USP shall make the Eckers whole for any amounts executed upon plus interest. Published statement number 7. The Eckers agree to use their best and diligent efforts to petition the editors of the publication Contact to publish the following statement in a prominent place in the publication. Well, there's Court and Ron. They're running right on time. The University of Science and this is what was to be published. The University of Science and Philosophy as a heading. Many of you may be aware of the very important legacy left by Walter Russell in his published works relating to the nature of humanity and the universe in which we exist. The University of Science and Philosophy is a world home study university for self-transcendency, founded to teach Walter Russell's new knowledge of the nature of man and his universe through universal law, natural science, and living philosophy. The university is dedicated to these concepts and their dissemination through programs and home study courses.
You can tell how dedicated they are.
That the university conducts and publishes. For information about their programs and to obtain further information about the Russell works, readers may contact the university at the following address and telephone number: Swannanoa Palace, Waynesboro, Virginia, 22980, telephone 703-942-5161.
Commander?
Yes.
Eustace brought up another point that we may want to make issue of. US&P, I think he said that they lost their university status, or they tried to say that they were a university, and the state came and said that they weren't, or something like that.
They were operating under a state tax exemption as a university, and finally someone in Richmond looked into the matter and found that there was no university, there was no faculty, there were no students, and no library, none of the necessary qualifications to have a university and get tax deduction in the state of Virginia. So I was told that they lost that tax exemption for that reason. They couldn't qualify.
So to pass themselves off as a university when in fact they are not, that's fraudulent too, isn't it?
No, because they're really a home study group, and a home study group is not a university. I mean, there's two different things there.
Stipulated dismissal, number 8.
Let's look at that before we move on just a little bit. Also, and I don't know that you even want to bother with this, you know, all of the things in rebuttal, but a home study course is like a course of anything that you pay for. Now, people can come and public information flows like from here, it's yours. Even though there isn't any charge for it, even if we pay you to come. It's yours, because this is, we are very open, and we allow anybody to use anything that we have, including our books, our journals, anything that we do. Although that does not mean that you have a right to use anyone else's material that we may use as far as publicly distributed. If we would use very much, for instance, of Mr. Mullen's works, we need to itemize that, give full credit, tell everybody, and this is what we do, where you can get the books, preferably not even from a distributor, but from the source. And I would hope that many people did contact Eustace personally over the period of years, because we always try, as in Coleman or whoever, we don't say, go to Mr. Green, the distributor, to get your books. Go to the author, if the author has the capability of shipping or whatever, or he can refer it to a distributor. I don't like the fact that distributors, you know, get theirs for at least 40% off, and then, son of a gun, they bring it back up and maybe even sell it for more. And they make, and I resented the fact that George Green worked out a deal then with Timothy Binder to distribute US&P's books, Walter Russell's books. Because let's take it where it's at. He got a 40% ripoff. We were continually advertising those books. You can't get that information any longer from any known source around, so go directly to US&P, not a distributor, and get that work. Get Mr. Russell's books. So they made a lot of money of our advertising. Go ahead, please.
Stipulated dismissal. Number 8, USP and the Eckers, through counsel, shall sign a stipulation for dismissal of the action described in paragraph 2 above with prejudice. USP shall file a stipulation with the court immediately after this agreement is signed by the Eckers, and USP and the stipulated permanent injunction and the stipulation attached hereto as Exhibit D, described above, is signed and filed with the court.
Now, you'll have to go back and remember some things in this agreement. There was a stipulation that the Eckers were not guilty to this point, but they also made a direct statement that we could not come back against US&P or their assigns. That was just an agreement. Up to the signing of that agreement, everything would be put down. Nobody's guilty of anything. And that's where it ended. Now we start again. And let's remind each other that US&P, unknown entity, see, without authorization, somebody has brought another lawsuit, but it negates everything that came before it now. Go on.
Release by the Eckers. Number 9. The Eckers hereby release USP and its employees, agents, officers, directors, attorneys, and representatives of any nature, of and from any and all claims, demands, actions, causes of action.
How careful they were to get everybody covered.
Defenses, liabilities, liens, dues, damages, debts, contracts, and judgments of any nature whatsoever to the date of this agreement. This release extends to all claims that were made or could have been raised in the action described in paragraph 2 above, and further extends to both known and unknown claims to the date of this release.
They knew Eckers had won the case, and this was to protect their financial assets. They knew that if it was pushed into trial, Eckers were going to end up in behalf of the Phoenix Institute, if no one else, because all of Dorma's writings are assigned or were or whatever up until this case, and everything gets so confused. But she doesn't take anything for those books. They are published. They're, whatever happens to them after she turns over whatever she writes. So she doesn't even know what happens to them. But they are the property of someone else. And this would leave them wide open. And I still tell you that the Phoenix Institute could have gone back in there and really dealt them misery. Because the property belonged to the Phoenix Institute.
Question?
Yes.
It says here several times, to the date of this release, that means actions committed by any of these officers, directors, attorneys, etc., following the date on which this was signed, are actionable. And the Eckers have not signed away their rights to pursue on this.
Right.
Like, for example, what happened in Fresno last week.
Well, but you see, they have now opened right.
Okay.
Now we can play with that. We had agreed up to the signing of it not to go back into all of that, but once they have reopened it, and they have reopened it how? On contempt of court regarding that injunction that should never have been allowed to stand, period. So they've opened it on the basis of something that the rest of you could not have reopened this case because it said specifically contempt.
By releasing unknown claims, the Eckers agree and acknowledge their intent to release claims that may exist to the date of this agreement, even if the Eckers have no present knowledge of any such claims on the factual basis of any such claims. The Eckers therefore assume the risk that their present knowledge may be inadequate to determine whether any such claims exist and further waive the provisions of Section 1542 of the California Civil Code, which provides, quote, a general release does not extend to claims which the creditor does not know or suspect to exist in his favor at the time of executing the release, which is known by him, which, if known by him, must have materially affected his settlement with the debtor. By releasing this provision, the Eckers voluntarily relinquish any and all of their protections and agree they will not raise or assert this statutory provision in any context to limit the scope and extent of this release. For purposes of this paragraph and paragraph 21, the phrase, quote, representatives of any nature or representatives does not include George W. Green, Desiree Green.
You see, we weren't all stupid.
America West Publishers or America West Distributors. Release and indemnification by USP.
It means we would not allow them to be excluded as far as damages or any other thing.
Release and indemnification by USP, number 10. USP hereby releases the Eckers and their agents, employees, attorneys, representatives, heirs, and assigns of any nature, of and from any and all claims, demands, actions, causes of action, defenses, liabilities, liens, dues, damages, debts, contracts, and judgments of any nature whatsoever to the date of this agreement, excepting duties and obligations arising from this agreement and the stipulated permanent injunction described above. This release extends to all claims that were made or could have been raised in the action described in paragraph 2 above, and further extends to both known and unknown claims to the date of this release. By releasing unknown claims, USP agrees and acknowledges its intent to release claims that may exist to the date of this agreement, even if USP has no present knowledge of any such claims or the factual basis of any such claims. USP therefore assumes the risk that its present knowledge may be inadequate to determine whether any such claims exist, and further waives the provisions of Section 1542 of the California Civil Code, which provides, quote, A general release does not extend to claims which the creditor does not know or suspect to exist in his favor at the time of executing the release, which, if known by him, must have materially affected his settlement with the debtor. By releasing this provision, USP voluntarily relinquishes any and all of its protections and agrees it will not raise or assert this statutory provision in any context to limit the scope and extent of this release. Warranty of authority. Number 11. Each of the parties to this agreement represents and warrants that it, he, she has the authority to enter into this agreement, and none of them has made or suffered any assignment, transfer, conveyance, encumbrance, hypothecation, or other disposition, voluntary or involuntary, of any claim or demand relating to any matter covered by this agreement.
Now, hold up right there. There's another very little deep hidden thing in there. Once again, they had maybe the authority as far as the legal department was concerned to represent Timothy Binder. But once again, you've used a generic corporation as being able to function as a person. And there were obviously Ecker or entities, persons. But US&P is not a person. It is a corporation operated by people. And there has never been an authorization furnished to anyone giving Binder the authority to act in behalf of US&P. But Binder did execute all of the agreements, all of everything, and has literally brought this second suit. Without even being the CEO president. So this is important to keep in your mind, because we're going to look at Tehachapi Distributing, also still named, and actually, how can you sue Tehachapi Distributing as a matter of fact when Rick Martin was the president, CEO of Tehachapi Distributing at the time it was in operation? So this opens up the ability of Rick Martin in behalf of Tehachapi Distributing, whether it is valid or invalid at this particular point, unless it was dissolved entirely, and he can now go back to enter into his case, the damages brought to him by just being named again in this case, because they never removed it from the document. Now, Ed Young has the right to go in full bore, because when you get the last letter that they sent, well, it wasn't the last one, the next to the last one, they named him and said he should suffer the same consequences of prison and sanctions. Well, what soup does he have to do with anything? He was not a party to any of these agreements, and contact is not the Phoenix Institute, or Ecker. As a matter of fact, you will not find that Doris Ecker has even been in that office where contact is housed more than four times, period, and all of the time she was in there, save one as a guest, when you had a guest who wanted some privacy and Mr. Young was with her in the back office. The only other reason she's ever been in there is to pick up Rick Martin or drop off something for him. So you've got so many, many things, and you're going to miss them. And if you want to do something in common law, you're going to have to get out there and you're going to have to utilize every last tiny opportunity you have, so that you keep coming up and coming up and coming up, and pretty soon every time the court reporters look and see any reference to any of you, they're going to be down there. They're going to be down there. And that's the way publicity begins to bring a focus. And in this manner is the same way that famous people, when they have exhausted everything that the court has done to them, let's take O.J. Simpson. And once again, I'm going to tell you, I don't care whether he was guilty or whether he is innocent. Doesn't matter. He was constitutionally railroaded. And when he exhausts everything else, you will have an avenue for him to go in and open up these cases without putting himself in jeopardy. And then you really begin to get some attention focused on your operation as people have a last resort place to appeal for help. So let's hold these things in mind. And don't let, just because you're going to find Ed, well, I don't want to go through all this bother. Well, basically, if the staff puts together a splendid case, it shouldn't even come to the point of him having to appear. But he's a bright mind. He can certainly, you know, if he holds three PhDs, he should be able to remember long enough to go say, my name is Ed Young, and you've abused me. And as they say, money talks. How much damage would Ed Young have possibly received by this kind of publicity and by trying to name him and get him thrown into prison when he's not an agent, he's not anything. He's an editor-in-chief. So let's not let anything slip through. Everybody's going to have to make their contribution. And what is more important is everybody who gets anything or does anything or even gets markers that are used from the Phoenix Institute or Ecker, or wherever you get them, you are damaged by this. And I'm sorry, Gene, I'm not going to let you not let them file. Yes, the admiral will come back and say, well, this is a conspiracy. No, sir, it is not a conspiracy. I'm an individual. I am an individual. And they have damaged me because my markers are no good if they can't get money to pay me. And what are you trying to do? You're trying to make a reputation and do a job right. And so they call you conspirators. What are they going to do? Pull all of you into court? They don't want to do that because you will each one demand a trial by jury. So they're going to start dismissing stuff right away. We can't not do it. Or if we don't do it, then we're not going to advertise ourselves as a constitutional anything, law center or otherwise. We're going to either do it and do it right and brave whatever is required of us, put our feet out there first, you know, just right behind Mr. Miller. We let him get shot first because he dared, you know.
Commander, I think you don't want to use the word individual. That applies to corporations under the law. You always want to use the word private citizen.
Okay.
Each party to this agreement agrees to indemnify and hold each other harmless from any breach of the representations and warranties contained in this paragraph. This indemnity obligation shall include payment of any and all claims, demands, losses, damages, liabilities, and expenses, including cost of suit and reasonable attorney's fees and disbursements, resulting from any breach of the representations or warranties contained in this paragraph. Negotiated agreement. Number 12. Each of the parties agrees and acknowledges this settlement agreement was negotiated between them and that each of them has been represented by counsel throughout the process of negotiating and executing this agreement.
So you need to nail the counsel.
USP representation. USP represents that it is the lawful owner of the copyrights to the following works of Walter Russell: The Secret of Light, Atomic Suicide, and the revised edition of A New Concept of the Universe, and has been the lawful owner of the copyrights to the home study course and the original...
Okay, stop right there. When Nora did her research, She found that the home study course that Eckers had purchased. Now, I want Eustace to get this clear. Any information, I'm not careless. Any information that we use verbatim, and I can dictate until hell freezes. And she's going to sit there and type. And we didn't want to screw up Walter's work by her trying to draw pictures. We tried it, but it just did not work. And we were into days trying to get through one illustration. They had already, because of Randall Lane, they didn't know Walter Russell, they didn't know University of Science and Philosophy. Randall Lane had decided to go back and visit them. Walter was dead, Lau was still living, and he wanted to go and visit with Lau. I guess he had some telephone conversations. And then he went on back to Oregon, and he sent to EJ the advertisements, you know. He'd picked up the little catalog of stuff. And he really was captivated by Lau and the idea. And, you know, Randall was quite New Age-oriented at the time. And he really wanted to know if possibly we would enjoy that home study course because it looked so good, and he wanted to financially help them. So EJ said, well, okay, Randall, I don't mind purchasing the home study course. This was years ago, but it was after here. I mean, it's within the last 10 years, so I would be happy to do that. And this home study course was purchased, and it's not given away, man. It's expensive, and I don't remember how many books might be in it or workbook type things, but it came in nice shrink wrap, and it sat in shrink wrap until we started writing. Now, that's how much copy we've done so far. Nobody has done anything except once. When there was a discussion about Walter Russell and his work, John Schroffer brought a book from 1927. It was signed to him. And a date, 1927. No information in the front as to copyright, publication, nothing. Now, maybe it just had been removed. Maybe it came that way. Maybe there was something there. But there was no way to have intentionally used anybody's copyrighted material. Now, you're going to tell me that a university, a public university, who has sold a home study course, now prevents the students and the purchaser of that from using the information? What the hell is a class for? And that's what we're talking about. And it turns out that particular edition was not copyrighted. And Mr. Binder lied about it because he answered everybody saying, and that home study course was copyright. Protected. No. And so they write about this new concept of the universe. What in the soup is that? These people never had heard of it, and Dorma still doesn't know what it is. Is this possibly their home study course now? Well, they can keep it. And I'll tell you something else. If Timothy Binder's been playing in it, they better keep it. Because that's the biggest botch and problem they ever had. And this man has gone out, and I want Eustace to know this, because I do have information, others don't. And I care about my people. Timothy Binder's gone out and with some of his buddies, and this can be documented. You can go to the Tesla Institute, or you can go out here to Borderline Sciences and their little seminars and stuff, and they not only are utilizing Walter Russell's material in conjunction with Tesla's patents, but they are patenting this stuff themselves as they produce it. It won't work I will see to it that it will never work. And yet I could make it work for them very easily if their intentions were different. It would be a great gift to mankind. They have enough of it put together, you know, that they, oh, well. I mean, and they are going to sell this idea. And this is why they put, they just stepped down and they couldn't just follow Kilo because he was going to be their biggest sword.